Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Today, is the relationship between China and Africa altruistic, more political, or economic? This and more on Dare to Win. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to discuss this and other questions.
Do
Good evening, family. This is Brother Shabaka. I'm a board member of Optimist and Us, and welcome again to Dare to Win radio program. If you wish to participate this evening with us, you can dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789, and press 1 on your keypad to ask a question or make a comment. Or you can join us by going to our web, Us Lifting Us website, and click on Us Lifting Us radio tab, and you can view and hear us from there. Or you can go to the website if you wish to leave a message. You can call us at 404-592-2789. Today, we have Baba Hekima joining us. Baba Hekima is an original founder, one of the original founders of Us Lifting Us. Good evening, Baba. How are you feeling this this evening?
Doing well, brother, doing well, and just trying to stay warm. But it's easier down here than where you are, but I'm doing well. Thank you for the question.
Yes, sir. Yes, it's pretty cold here. Expect to go down to single digits during the weekend, but I'm glad I'm inside. Father, what do you think? What do you think of, you know, in the news, if it's not Trump, it's trade with China, or it's building a wall and a whole bunch of other nonsense. And I'm trying to figure out this picture. Why China? Why China? What's going on with China? Is the relationship that you see emerging from the news account with China and Africa altruistic, more political, or economic? What's your take on it?
Well, I think ultimately everything is political. But it may not be at this stage. I think it's more economic. But the global shift, as China is rising, and Europe and America is declining, it's predicted possibly within the next 10, 15, 20 years. That China's economy will outstrip America's economy by far. It's also predicted that India's economy will outstrip America's economy. So the countries of Eurasia are growing much faster, and, of course, the population there's some advantages as well. And so you see some contention with America and China. But what I think we in Ulu and African people in Africa and the diaspora must pay close attention to is the emergence of China on the African continent, but also in the Caribbean, Central and South America, where China is involved with Africans there as well. China is Africa's number one trading partner. I should say Africa, well, the trade in terms of the motherland, where Europe, America was the dominant trading partner in recent years, but China has surpassed it. And I would encourage all of us to do our due diligence and pay attention to what's happening in Africa vis-a-vis China. I would encourage us to, in specific, look at some of the discussions about the new Silk Road. We know that historically, in other periods, in not too recent history, Chinese merchants were famous for their routes, commercial routes, promoting, for the most part, silk. That's why it took its name, the Silk Road. But in the current situation, and in the current language and talk around the globe, it's promoting China's new Silk Road, and unlike before, where it was just simply caravans on land and then shipping routes, the major elements now of the new Silk Road are roads, of course, bridges, railways, canals, ports, and the digital backbone to support that. And it's commonly also called Belts and Roads Initiative, BRI, Belts and Roads Initiative. And one of the maps I saw of the Belts and Roads Initiative or the New Silk Road actually included North America. And so China is really thinking, out 50 and 100 years from now. And so they see themselves as developing trade routes that they dominate, that they build probably, all the way through North America into Mexico, Central and South America. And, of course, they are blanketing Eurasia, Asia and Europe, and of course, Africa. And the major player, or the major territory, should I say, for what China is doing, outside of its own turf, there on their continent is Africa. And I think there's only one of the 54 countries in Africa that has not joined in a partnership with China and are building one project or another. So I think it's real. I think it's an extension of China's recent success with its growth spurt in bringing millions of people to new economic standards. And I think part of what's happened is that they have outgrown their capacity to continue to grow only on their mainland and the surrounding countries. And so they see Africa not only in terms of its mineral wealth, but also other sectors and eventually consumers, because as we all know, our people are the fastest growing people on the planet, and we will soon outnumber the Chinese. I think there's 1.4 or 1.5 billion Chinese, but this Africa is right behind them with 1.1 or 1.2 billion, and our growth spurt is faster. So I think China sees the writing on the wall that if they all continue to grow based on their cultural imperatives and their narratives, then while the opportunity is there, they are positioning themselves. And the question you asked initially in terms of whether this move is more political or economic, and I think I would answer, and I'll end here, and say that for right now, it's economics. But for a political purpose down the road in terms of soft empire, so to speak. And but I just encourage all of us in Hulu, all of us involved in our people's movement in the U.S., in Europe, on the motherland, to really pay close attention to what's happening, because many of us are excited positively about what China is doing in Africa, but many of us are also leery and are pointing to some possible traps that we may be falling into.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Baba. Yes, leeriness, yeah, I've heard some discussion, but I think from what you just asked, it seems like, or and maybe I'm looking at this naively, that you think that China may be a better partner for Africa than what the West was?
Yeah, I think in the short term, it seems that most of the African leaders, the AU, feels that it's a better fit. And it possibly is a better fit right now because China is marketing itself as aid with no strings. And, of course, we know that's almost an oxymoron. I mean, there's always strings, right? And so China seems not to be requiring that the culture or the political system, the ways of the nation states and regions that they deal with, they're not concerned about coming in and asking for political change. So China's doing business with democracies on the African continent, with dictatorships on the African continent, with socialist experiments on the African continent. It doesn't matter as long as they're able to do business, quote unquote. And but yeah, I think in the short term, and whatever I think or you think, you know, right now, again, China is Africa's largest business partner, trading partner. And so it's happening, whether we like it or not. And I think, to be fair, China is presenting itself as a nation state and its corporations that simply want to do business and not meddle so much in the politics and the culture of the various nation states and regions. So it seems that at this point China is a better trading partner. But I just think we have to be careful because what China is also doing, the contracts to build the roads, the railways, the canals, and, of course, now they're beginning to bring military into the continent. I think maybe only one military base now or two, but be sure that the growth of the military bases will continue. And I think I saw a situation where a port that they had funded, a seaport, maybe defaulted, and they took over the port. And it was a situation fairly conducive for the Chinese shipping fleet, and military fleet for them to be able to use that port. And, of course, now they own it. So it bears watching, and I think ultimately if we are not the primary drivers or the prime movers, then we're always likely to be put in a position where we are subservient to another people's and another nation's interests as opposed to our own interests.
Thank you so much. We will explore a little bit later that skepticism that I noted in your tone. Could you tell us what sectors or aspects of African economies are the Chinese focused on primarily?
Yeah, what you see mostly is transportation, the roads, the canals, the railroads, the high speed trains, and that's by far the outlay of capital is more in that sector. But then energy, oil, and other energy producing products, and then of course manufacturing, and part of what's happening is that, of course, China is noted for its manufacturing capacity. It is the primary manufacturing center of the world at this point. That may be waning a little bit. But China is also involved in building up their manufacturing capacity in Africa. But in order for that to be effective, then the transportation grid has to be robust. So the roads, the canals, the railways, the bridges that they are building, yes, they are for everybody. And for the Africans, of course, ourselves. But I'm thinking that China is looking and is already involved in bringing manufacturing to Africa using cheaper African labor than is the case in China, because the wage level of the Chinese has risen. And now the Chinese can put a Chinese factory in some regions of Africa, and from a labor standpoint, can secure labor cheaper than they can even in China. And so the sectors, transportation and energy and now manufacturing, but I see that, in my opinion, I think China sees more and more manufacturing moving to Africa and to other parts of the world, and they need a robust transportation capacity, both rail and roads, and of course air and shipping, but that's where it is now. I think number one transportation, number two energy, and then manufacturing. But of course, we don't want to ever forget the extraction of minerals from the continent. They're heavily involved in that, in addition to all other minerals as well. And of course, the transportation grid allows them to move those less expensively as well. But yes, by far, and I think it's important to understand that from what I'm gathering, and a lot of times we think about China as this communist giant, but China is morphed into a mixed kind of approach. You have a lot of private enterprise in China. And so the government from the state, they're pouring dollars into some of these initiatives. But right behind them and beside them are private businesses, Chinese businesses, that are coming and doing things in Africa, actually building permanent settlements and bases, and also having an impact on the China-Africa relationships, and positioning themselves possibly to also be involved in the coming years in another neo-colonial type relationship if our brothers and sisters in leadership on the continent are not careful.
Thank you so much, Baba, for that. If you wish to join the conversation, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789, and press 1 on your pad if you wish to ask a question or make a comment. I see that we have two calls. Let me go to the first one for the person who is number is 6093, ending in 6093. Could you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Yes, greetings. This is Sister Nanana calling from Denver, Colorado. How are you, Brother Shabaka?
Greetings, sister.
Hey.
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Right.
Thank you so much for calling in.
And greetings to you, Baba Hakima.
Greetings to you, sister. I was surprised that you're in place this week.
Well, yeah, I'll be on the road tomorrow, so I have a question, something I'd like you to comment on, Baba Hakima, and if you could give your thoughts on this in terms of more of the long-term impact that you see. Two items in particular. One is that the Chinese language is now becoming required course. You know, you have to learn Chinese in order to graduate from some colleges and universities on the continent now. And it would appear to me that that trend is starting to grow. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is that China is offering opportunities for children of Mother Africa, children who are not yet adults. So these are children who would be grade school, high school children, to come to boarding schools in China to be educated. And, you know, so the Chinese are starting to make their mark in the educational arena. And I would just like to get your comments and your thoughts on what you see long-term happening with both of those situations, assuming that they are going to, their numbers of people involved is going to grow.
Yes, that's scary, isn't it? In addition to the two areas that you talked about in terms of language and educating children, also there are training academies for business leaders and for political leaders to go to China and study and be immersed in the party philosophy. And so you'll hear people talking about soft empire, and I'm when Shabaka talked about my being leery of the Chinese in Africa, I really see it as a major power play with a soft hand or a soft glove, as opposed to the kind of diplomacy and economic wrecking ball practices of Europe. But I, in my opinion, this is for the same purpose long term. So I think what you point out, sis, and the question you ask is that short term, you know, it looks like we're in the bed with them, with China. And we're already in there, you know, big time. And that the African Union, the states themselves, the nation states, all of our movements on the planet, we must supplant the kind of influence that you just talked about with an African-centered and African-based paradigm. We just can't swallow. For a good many years, we swallowed the European paradigm, and we know where it got us. And so it looks like we're swallowing the Chinese paradigm now, and it comes with consequences overall. So I appreciate and not only that, intermarriage. The Chinese are marrying into families in Africa, and so not only the language, but other ways of manipulating the culture. And I see it as, you know, we talk about it all the time in Ulu. If we're not in charge, if we don't control, then we leave a vacuum, and then other forces and other people close. So So thank you for that question and that inference.
Yeah, sound like what the Arabs did. We have another caller on the line, but first we'll have to take a station break. And soon as we come back, we will pick up that other caller who's calling from 4457. Stay with us. We're going to take a two-minute break and be right back. To bring you our second half. If you wish to join us in this conversation, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Press 1. And then have delivered to us your question or your comment. We would now like to go to the phones and the person. Who extension last four digits are 4457. You're on the air. Give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Yes, good evening, brothers and sisters. This is Abby O'Doon in New York. I want to greet you, bring you all peace and
greetings.
Blessings. And I'm pleased to be in the presence of the drum. I was listening very closely to Akima, and I shared some of his anxiety vis-a-vis our relationship with China. But a couple of things I wanted to bring on the table. I think he's right that we need to pay attention to whatever is going on around us so that we can craft our own direction more appropriately, overtly, covertly, and in light of. I do recall slightly more than a year ago, they had a major convention in China of the leadership, the party leadership of China, and the leader, whose name I can never pronounce properly, so I won't try, was on stage, and through the translator that we get here in New York, he was in the process of saying that I'm pleased to announce that after all these years, and now that we're up to 1.3 billion people, we are now in a position to say that we have the capacity through our systems and subsystems to feed, clothe, and house all of our people. I'll never forget that. That's like 14 months ago or so. I practically fell off my chair. I said, damn, we're practically the same amount of people. We have the capacity to do something similar down the road. But here's the thing. And just in recent times, just before people like Hakima and I were born, they were going through some terrible times. They were warring against different states within their group. They were speaking many different languages within their group. Their landmass was contiguous, although half of it was behind the so-called Great Wall. And they had to go through all that, including a Chinese invasion, some Western manipulation through the Opium Wars, based in Shanghai mostly, to get to this point. Now, I think that in the process of getting to this point, they had to reaffirm their cultural baseline coming out of Buddhism and get rid of all that anti-God rhetoric and realize that they can't move forward economically without acknowledging their cultural root. And despite the fact that the world is flaunting all of their private enterprise stuff, I still get a hint that their private enterprise is more like profit sharing because their baseline is still socialist, i.e., from those that can to those who need, from those who have the ability to those who have the need, all right? And, right, well, there was a time we recall when Africans were running to Moscow to go to Lumumba University because the Russians were trying to inculcate that thing with limited success. The West that we live under every day here is trying to use language designed to scare us because we're such a frightened people. We don't know which way to go except to react. God forbid anybody should like smile in our direction. We go, well, what did he mean by that smile? You know, and that's one of their things, their stereotype things is the veiled Asian. You never know what he's really thinking because he's got this little batik smile going on. But the point of the matter is they plan ahead. They have an agenda, they're hardworking, and they're moving forward. It's scary because we don't know them. But you know what's even more scary? We don't know ourselves. We don't know ourselves. There's some rumors going around that they are in the process of corrupting some of the leadership brothers on the continent. Great big sums of money disappearing from Chinese funds undercover that the people don't even know and corrupting these brothers. I mean, if there could be some proof to some of that, then those brothers need to be identified and purged or brought to account. So anyway, I agree with Hakima that we need to, like, be cool, get our plan, work out the bugs, keep it moving forward, meet and greet with those brothers, because between them, the Chinese, the Jews, and us, we are the oldest people on the planet, and we're older than everybody. I don't think that connection is going to get lost in this shuffle. I think it can be enhanced. Now, one critical way that we can measure their thing is how soon and how confident are they going to be in terms of things like pollution issues and clean water issues that they're having problems with. So as we see how they handle that, then we can make a judgment about how they're going to move forward dealing in Africa and with African people. All right, so I'll stand by and listen to your response.
Thank you, brother. Baba, you have a comment to that?
I do. I think our brother brings out a very important point because some people who are looking at China actually refer to them as a civilization state as opposed to a nation state. In other words, they're underpinning they are underpinned by their ancient culture more so than laws. In other words, in the West, they talk about, in particular, America being a nation based on laws. And China is based on their ancient culture and their spiritual principles. And I think our brother really points out something important because, you know, we have many nations, regions, tribal groups on Africa, but there's a common culture. To the extent that we can tap into what is common among us and fashion political systems, economic systems, management systems, and other systems that fit us and that are practical in the 21st century, we can have the kind of growth and the kind of success at meeting the needs of our people that, that China has had. And I'm hopeful that those of us outside of the continent, in North America, in Europe, wherever we are, can join with our brothers and sisters there on the continent to forge this new emergence, coming back on the stage of world history, so to speak, from our own perspective. And yes, it's, you're always in relationship with others, but I concur with Brother Abiodun's sentiment in terms of fashioning something based on our culture and our principles and our interests that we control, the that we're in the driver's seat and not always in the caboose. Thank you for that, brother.
Well, then, what do you think? Are the Chinese racist?
Yes, in some ways. For instance, there are, and I say that with some qualification, brothers and sisters from the African continent are going to China in quite some, not as many Chinese that are coming to Africa, but it's back and forth. And the brothers and sisters who go to China are met quite often in some rude fashions. And I think the price that China paid to pull their culture together and to focus on their culture and their traditions put them in a position where they fear the other. They find it difficult to deal with the other. And so that comes across quite crudely. And so brothers and sisters in China are having to form separate villages. I find it fairly difficult to integrate in any meaningful way into the economy. So they end up doing the task that they get that they came there for, if it's in a university or in a manufacturing capacity or whatever it is. And then once that closed down, they got to find Africans, brothers and sisters of like mind and spirit, to survive culturally in China. So, yes, that is. And so they bring with them that superior notion of their culture and their traditions. So that is a factor. Now, some people are saying that they're working hard at reeducating their people and beginning to tone down that. But we're talking about a vast population. It'll take a long time to rid them of those notions. But not only that, they have it on their own mainland as well. In other words, there are people who are part of the Chinese experience who are not considered Chinese. And so those cultures are suffer at the hands of the Chinese in various ways and in harsh ways as well. One of the things that I'm hopeful in this discussion and the future discussions we learn from the Chinese in terms of how they look at developing a landmass. Because I submit that the Africans in America and the diaspora should be and must join with our brothers and sisters on the continent and become more a dominant force and partnership such that the dependence on Europe, on Japan, on Indonesia, on China, on Israel, is minimized, and and we began to step into the lurch. Of course, we got to do a lot more growing and developing on our own to position ourselves for that. But we have the resources if they were properly aggregated and channeled to support our brothers and sisters, which, of course, their interest is our interest in many cases as well. I'll end there.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you so much, Baba, for that. Again, if you wish to join this conversation as during the weaning hours, 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Press 1 to make a comment or ask a question. We're going to take a slight break, and then when we come back, we're going to explore a little bit further. What does this mean for ULU in its development and organizing? We'll be back in 2 minutes. Talked about, you know, some cautionary things we need to be concerned about in the last segment. Let me ask you, from your perspective, what can the diaspora and what can ULU learn from this adventure of China into Africa and its plans, at least as we are interpreting it?
Well, I think the main thing that we can learn is the value of clear intent. It's obvious that the Chinese are intent on dominating planet Earth from a cultural perspective, from an economic perspective, from a political perspective. When Brother Abiy Adun, who called in from New York a few minutes ago, mentioned the speech of the Xi Jinping, I have problems pronouncing his name as well, but it's clear intent. And I think power emanates from a made-up mind, a clear intent, and then everything else flows from that. So I think that's the bigger lesson. ULU just received an application for membership today or yesterday. I'm not seeing it right now. From Johannesburg. And, of course, as most of us know, ULU is global. We have a few members in Canada, Europe, East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, Caribbean, Central and South America. So we have the capacity to grow not only our membership, but as we build the economic infrastructure that we envision, aspects of that will be all over the planet. And I think the lessons to be learned is that, I'll say this, George Frazier with FrazierNet has a saying, and he talks about it quite often. He says, jokingly, that God told him to tell us that God ain't giving us no more because we haven't made use of what God has already given us. He jokingly talks about that, but there's a lot to be learned from that. We are an abundantly rich, wealthy, resourceful people on the planet. And so the lesson to be learned overall is that our intent should be to have dominion over our lands and our cultures, our people, our resources, and nothing short of that. And that our every political move, our every economic move should be in furtherance of that determination to have dominion, to have self-determination, to have self-rule. The implications for Ulu are very, very clear. As we develop and strengthen ourselves and our capacity to build out the economic infrastructure that we envision, it needs to be aligned with what's happening on the planet. I mean, it just can't be random. And so I draw inspiration, even though I think there's some diabolical intent here, but I draw inspiration from the success of the Chinese and the way they are looking at the planet and promoting their long-term self-interest. And as Ulu continues to grow and develop, we will have internal capacities through think tanks, through planning units, through other instruments of taking a closer look at the moves that we need to make, both economically and ultimately politically and culturally as well. So there are a lot of lessons to be learned, I think, from what the Chinese have done and what the Chinese will do in the near future.
Thank you so much for that, Baba. For the rest of you, you can participate now in helping Ulu and the diaspora grow. One, by going to our website, that's usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. Read the information on the website. See if you have interest, if your interest connects with them, if you feel a need, all right, to want to make a statement. And what we place on the website is instrumental in helping you to make that statement. Join, read further. You can join us, all right, and become a member, all right. Only members of people of African descent, Black African descent, can become members, and that'll allow you access to the assets that Ulu has and our plans and our and project your own plans into that. As you said, Baba said, you know, receiving an application from Johannesburg, so we are global. African people are global. And the Chinese understand they have people all over the globe, all right, and they're using that to their advantage. They're using, they're sort of like ambassadors representing China because they still speak their language. I don't care where you go, in Chinatown. You know, I've been in China, many Chinatowns throughout the U.S. They speak in Chinese, and these are, you know, second and third generation Chinese, all right? They still speak in Chinese, all right? And we're complaining about our English isn't right. So go to the website and join. If you're in the Atlanta area or Georgia area, North Georgia area, visit an establishment that we created. It's called Cafe Ulu. Join Cafe Ulu. It has its own website, and that website is Cafe Ulu, CafeUlu.com. Look at what we have there. You can buy coffee online. You can go there. All right. Join the atmosphere of the camaraderie, brotherhood, sisterhood, and engage. Our people are there. We're trying to build and solidify a relationship which will help us. Join our campaign. Participate in becoming a supporter. We got a number of things that you can do to help build this movement. You can build this movement, and we need you to build this movement. Go to the website. If you have questions, after you review everything, give us a call, 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. We'll gladly return the call, tell you how you can help. If you're not clear on how you can help, you can tell us how you can help. If you are clear on how you can help, all we want to do is have you engaged. We engage. We welcome your participation. We welcome all of you who have come to the radio program. We meet every Thursday night at 9 p.m., and we welcome you, and I really appreciate the dialogue that we have had this this evening. Bob, I'd like to thank you for being able to take out from your busy schedule and join us this evening. And family, we look forward to you coming back next week again at Ooh, Dare to Win, and we will sign off.